Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Well, welcome to the show. This is brought to you in association with West Yorkshire Electrical. WYElectrical.co.uk for details. You know what electricians do. They are fully accredited, which is always good news when it comes to employing people around the house, Phil.
Didn't seem to matter to Normanton much when I was in your old studio.
No.
But times have changed.
Yeah, the electrics in that were terrifying. We should have got West Yorkshire Electrical in to oversee them and make sure it was all street legal. But thankfully, this is far more...
And the police.
Far more professional setup. West Yorkshire Electrical, they are a specialist in renewables. So if you want your solar panels doing, give them a shout. They've also got a team of in-house roofers as well now, which means that it won't get subcontracted out. They can also do separate roofing work. Look them up for details. View from the press box, Phil. We are gathering together now. It's 5 o'clock on the nose on Saturday evening. Leeds lost to Southampton in the final game of the season. What do you want to say about that press conference then? What did you make of that then? Because this is the view from the press box. So tell us how you took it from a press box point of view and what Farker had to say afterwards. Was he defensive? Was he upbeat? What was the general mood?
I had a very good view of the fight for the inflatable donut in the first half. Did you see that in the West Stand?
No, I heard the cheer. There was like an "Oi!"
Yeah.
But I didn't...
The stewards went for it. The crowd fought for it. The crowd won. I was quite impressed actually with how gamely they fought to make sure that they didn't lose that donut. Step up in class as well from that inflatable doll. Do you remember that going around?
I do, yes.
In 2015.
Looked quite shocked.
Happy memories. Farker, I would have said that the tone of his press conference on Thursday told you that he didn't expect to get anything. Didn't expect to win the game today or to get anything from the game, but he did not expect
to get anything from this weekend.
Yeah. He felt like it was most likely over. I think deep down knew that it definitely was. Before we sort of get into Leeds specifically, I would say that the prospect of any sort of final day shenanigans at the top were completely blown before a ball was kicked, because that team that Huddersfield played at Ipswich was an absolutely classic, this club's been relegated and about to get cleared out lineup and was never going to get anything down there, was certainly never going to beat Ipswich. It was the ideal game for them on the last day. Deserved to win it, deserved to finish second, went very close to the title. I don't think you can argue with the top two as it is. He was trying to be upbeat, was Farker. I would almost go as far as saying that in terms of body language and comments and everything else, he seems like the most upbeat person in the building, which I suppose he has to be. And he did say when we asked, you know, where is the sort of leadership coming from now? Where is the reaction coming from? Who is going to get a grip of this? He said it needs to be me. You know, it's the manager who has to do this. And that's going to be... He's got a lot of work on his hands this week, and that's part of what he's going to have to do. He didn't want to say that he thought Leeds had thrown it away. I'll come on to this in a second, but there's actually quite a contrast between the way he saw it and the way Russell Martin saw it, or at least Russell Martin saw how it had gone for Southampton. His attitude was that it wasn't the last month that had killed Leeds. It was the first couple of months as they were getting through the summer and getting going. I know what he means. I find that a little bit difficult to go along with, because I think there have been clear opportunities in the past few weeks. To just sort of go back over what we said on Thursday's podcast, or Friday if you listened to it then, they set themselves up nicely. It was there for the taking, it was there to be done. They haven't managed to do it. I think in particular at QPR, really did freeze quite badly. And we're not particularly on it today at all, but I understood that the circumstances were a little bit difficult today. He didn't feel like it had been a bottle job, put it that way. He felt... still feels that Leeds are the third best team in the division, deserve to go up on that basis, and will, you know, in his view, hopefully get what they deserve in the playoffs. Russell Martin was asked something really similar. Somebody said to him, now that the season's finished, you see where you are on the table and everything else, do you regret some of the results that got away from you? Do you regret the fact that you haven't actually been able to go for second place and to get it? And he said, yes. In his words, he said he was really pissed off with some of the results. He felt like there'd been mistakes made, some of which he'd made, some of which had been made by the players, and that actually, given the time again, Southampton could have done it. But the caveat was, and he said this in response to the question of whether he was surprised at the way Leeds had kind of caved in the last month, that he wasn't surprised because the division, the way it is this season, is just so difficult. And he made the point, we went 25 games unbeaten and we finished fourth. And that's pretty much the competition we're in.
Which mirrors, I suppose, our post-Christmas run into the March international break, doesn't it? We had an absolutely great run and gave ourselves a great chance. But unfortunately, when that opportunity presented itself, as you say, we just didn't take it. I do find it quite difficult. I know why Farke's saying it. And, you know, you've just made that point yourself. I understand that. But you can't divorce the overall outcome of the season from what's happened in the last month.
The critical moment.
Because it is, as you've been saying in recent weeks, it's about performing when it matters.
When it matters most.
When it matters most. And the point about those early season defeats is, and he told us, you know, by September we'll be in better shape. And we were in better shape and we had a far better run from that point onwards. But the stakes are so much lower when you drop points in the early part of the season, aren't they? So context is everything for me in that. So it doesn't quite stand up to scrutiny fully for me, but equally I do understand where he's coming from with that and why. I suppose he's trying to just pour a bit of oil on stormy waters as well, isn't he?
He is almost admitting to some of that though, because if you listen to what he says carefully, every now and again he will dip into comments saying we lack a bit of experience. You know, he will sort of concede that confidence has taken a hit, that they haven't played as well this side of the international break as they were prior to it, that something has gone off a little bit. I mean, he was trying to defend the performance today, particularly the issues in midfield, which just seemed to be chronic from the start, on the basis that he'd asked the players to be almost kind of, not uber ambitious, but he'd asked them to take risks and to gamble with their positioning because there was no point in drawing the game. They needed to win it and then hope for the best at Ipswich. It didn't actually feel to me like an uber ambitious performance to the naked eye. You know, it didn't look like that. And I did think it was a big concern to see Southampton sort of riding coaching horses through that midfield over and over again. I mean, by the time Jack Stevens did it in the second half, got past Kamara, you felt as if he'd seen that on multiple occasions and too many. And I do think if you're looking at the bigger picture over the past, say, 6-7 games, it feels as if you started to see Leeds getting hurt in positions and areas where they weren't being hurt previously, and that defensively they have started to look like they're a little bit easier to exploit than they were.
The marking was shambolic today at times. We had four players around at one point. I think it was their first goal. I couldn't quite remember which one it was on the match ball, but it was their first goal. We had four players there, so it's not about risky positions on the field, is it? They were there. Yep. They just didn't tighten up quick enough or track runners or get close enough to people.
If you look where, when Armstrong scores with that half volley, there are about four other Southampton players behind him who are unmarked. So it's not as if the ball's going to drop to all of them. But if Armstrong doesn't do anything with it, if he swings and misses or if it comes off him or deflects or whatever, there's a high likelihood that it's going to run to somebody else who's going to have Millie to beat and, you know, an easy finish in front of them. And likewise with the second goal, Walker Peters chases it. Firpo doesn't or doesn't chase it properly, then gets completely skinned. Nobody tracks Smallbone. There was a lot I felt in that performance today that needs fixed and needs remedied before the playoff semi-finals. And it's not to say that Farke can't do it, because Leeds have been much better with those things, you know, previously in the season than they are at the moment. But they've definitely hit the black ice a bit. And I don't think in either the QPR game or the game today, you saw a team who looked as if, I was just writing this just now, saying a team who look like they've been pipped just, but they know they're okay and they know that they'll regroup and they'll crack on and come again. And I thought you saw that in the reaction of the crowd. Did you stay behind afterwards?
Yeah, I stayed till the very bitter end, yeah.
So the crowd dwindled as it was bound to at that point. Stadium was probably a third full, I would say, by the time they started doing the walk around the pitch, because it was the last game. Hard to quantify, but you know, a lot of people had gone. Reasonable number had stayed. And what you were sort of expecting was that there'd be a kind of gentle applause for them as they went round. But actually what you got was the crowd trying to wind them up, you know, in a positive way. And I think there were two aspects to that. One was that I do think people genuinely wanted to show a bit of appreciation for the fact that they have performed really well for most of the season. But it also felt like a bit of a rocket up the arse, you know, of saying, this isn't actually done yet. Wakey, wakey, the playoffs are coming. And what we've seen today has been a bit flat and asleep. Like everybody needs to redouble their efforts, get it together. Because this is, I mean, Carrow Road away is a tough first leg of the semi-finals. I think Farke knows that. So they're going to have to be on it. They're not going to get away with a performance like that. Today, I think, to be fair to Farke, the way he sets them up, and he said this himself, you know, or implied this himself, that he'll purposely try to make them tighter at Carrow Road. But they won't get away with that today. They won't get away with the performance that they had at QPR. And goals like those conceded today will absolutely kill them if they concede like that in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. And I suppose you can fall back on the example of the Middlesbrough game recently when it comes to playing Norwich, because Norwich will be more possession-based, won't they?
Yeah.
And Leeds will probably sit deeper and try and hit them on the break,
yeah,
which is what they did so effectively in the second half in the league game. But but conceded the ball to Middlesbrough, didn't they, a couple of weeks back, and let Middlesbrough come onto them, which gives us the space to play in. Because the style of football, like, that's one of the things that's been picked apart a bit, fairly or unfairly, this season. Everyone will have their own opinion about that. And those comments about the slightly more risky football today, the bone I would pick with that is, I understand it in the context of today. Why didn't we try that against Blackburn when the opportunity was there? Why don't we go out to try and smother teams at times? So it's all fine and well, you know, taking risks on the final day, which feels like a little bit of a Hail Mary. But is that kind of a manifestation in itself of Farke's risk-averse approach over the course of the season?
Going forward,
isn't it too late now doing it on the final day?
Going forward, did you really see any difference in Leeds today? Any sort of vast difference to the way they were structured? The difference I saw was that every time Southampton attacked and came up with the ball, particularly in the centre of midfield, there didn't seem to be anybody there. Neither Gruev nor Kamara seemed to know how to reliably put themselves in a position where if the ball was turned over or Southampton came forward, they were able to intervene. I didn't think as an attacking force or an attacking unit, it was unlike anything we'd seen from Farke before. It looked quite like Leeds, particularly in the second half when they finally put a little bit of pressure on for a while. And it didn't feel like kind of all-out gung-ho attacking either. I know that's what he said, but I wasn't feeling that vibe in the stadium.
No, I would tend to agree with you. It wasn't wave after wave after wave trying to swamp them, was it?
It wasn't like you were suddenly throwing two up front and starting with three at the back and trying to bomb on in every respect. It was the team. Without any doubt, Gruev and Kamara were straying more than you'd expect them to, but not in a way that was kind of laying it on thick for Southampton. I thought it was quite an easy day for Southampton.
Yeah, do you agree that this has perhaps happened a little bit across the course of the season? And it almost seems a little bit churlish to try and pick apart the football that's achieved 90 points and got 27 wins on the board.
It's not churlish,
but
because it hasn't quite been enough, has it? It needs to work now if they're gonna go up. So you do have to sort of reasonably and fairly look at what isn't working. They've done really well to get themselves to this point and to 90 points. But if they are going to go up, they're going to have to turn in three really strong performances from here. And that hasn't been the story of the last month.
Oh, one strong performance and two flukes will do me.
All three flukes won't be
particularly enjoyable. But no, I'm just thinking that there are times when I find, I don't know, some of our attacking play. And again, we've scored so many goals and we've not conceded many. And yet it feels like we're complaining about the football. It's just come short in some areas, hasn't it? But I was just going to say, Phil, and please respond to this, is that sometimes it just doesn't quite click. It doesn't quite work. Somerville today picks up the ball, and because we've attacked relatively slowly and moved it around, worked it around, there was a point today which he had four players around him. I looked and I kind of just laughed at myself. I thought, you can see what Southampton are trying to do. And that's just not enough sometimes to beat teams, because the end of them going backwards. But then there are other times when we get men on the overlap. You see Junior Firpo bombing down the outside and they manage to get the ball out to him. I don't know, but just sometimes just like it's that final ball or just the opportunity to shoot sometimes doesn't present itself. And I don't know, is that a symptom of the football? I don't know. You tell me.
There are weird patterns going on in the Championship, because you've had Leicester, who looked like they were running away with it from the start, and actually kind of have, you know, they lost today, but you know, promoted and deservedly won the title, but then ran into trouble. And we spoke a few times about the sort of griping there was down in Leicester about Maresca's style and his tactics, particularly the sort of what you would call really patient build up that put it this way, our Leicester writer Rob Tanner was writing about people in the stands basically shouting pass it forward to a team who were top of the league and looked like they were going to win the title. You've seen it with Russell Martin as well at Southampton. They had that really long run that put them in contention, but then, like Leeds, weren't able to capitalise on it properly.
I've heard those shouts in the Leeds crowd as well, Phil.
Yeah, but so is Southampton. So Southampton's play, when it is pass, 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 and it's laboured and it doesn't work, it seems to rile people, except then Southampton come to Leeds and play like that today, where I thought they got their game plan absolutely spot on today.
He tweaked the tactics as well, didn't he?
Yeah. So suddenly, in the press conference afterwards, you've got people asking him about really strong performance, really good performance, really encouraging performance. Whereas if you dip into press conferences over the past month or, you know, past couple of months, you'll find occasions where Martin is basically talking about, you know, why it hasn't worked, or a crowd who are dissatisfied about getting absolutely routed away at Leicester. And in a funny sort of way, the outlier in all this, Ipswich, are over here. No infighting, no real, and this has to be a product of the fact that nobody really saw this coming at Ipswich, or 100% expected that they were going to go up automatically. But they've just been a sort of stable and calm ship all the way through.
But what do the other three have in common, though?
100%.
Yeah. So it's the need to get back to the Premier League because financial Armageddon awaits otherwise. Yeah.
So it's the juxtaposition, isn't it, of Ipswich being a side who don't have the resources or the budget of the other three clubs, and on that basis, all things being equal, shouldn't have gone up automatically. But on the flip side, they don't have the kind of intense and horrible pressure of teams who've come down and have the kind of hangover of frustration from seasons that have gone badly wrong, or projects that have gone badly wrong, transfers that haven't worked, investment that just has not paid off. And that, you know, that is Leeds. And then become kind of desperate to get out again, and it does manifest itself in people feeling really tense.
I described it on the Match Ball that we recorded just a little bit earlier on as they've taken the season and basically succeeded by being fearless. They've been throwing people forward and tried to outscore opponents, which, again, it's hard not to have a little romantic part of your brain think back to you know who when Leeds did that, and that's perhaps a source of frustration, seeing the contrasting styles. But there were frustrations back then under Bielsa. People saying there are times when we need to be a little bit more conservative and preserve what we've got, and then we do that, and I don't know, it's just some sort of Goldilocks thing we're after, isn't it, I suppose?
The thing about Ipswich is that if they finished in the playoffs and lost, I don't think you would reasonably predict that they would do this again next season. I don't think you'd reasonably predict that McKenna would be there for that much longer, because he has fallen into that category of coach now who other clubs are going to try and poach. I mean, it goes without saying. I would assume that he'll stick with Ipswich for now, but, you know, somebody's going to have a go at him if this carries on, because he...
Welcome to the Premier League, lads.
He does look very, very good. Yeah, no, he doesn't. And he's done just... can hardly pick fault with the job he's done there at all. It's just been kind of perfect for the resources that he's actually had. So what they've done is not only set up this ridiculously good chance for themselves and a bit unforeseen, but they've taken it. And so often you don't take these chances and you rue them for a long, long time, a little bit like Leeds in the playoffs in 2006, a bit of a, you know, fairly major sliding doors moment, or feels like it looking back. But for Ipswich, it was there.
We had the chance to fold the club in 2007, didn't it? And we didn't take it. It was there, wasn't it? Just liquidate us.
But you see, Leicester go up now, and...
I'm kidding, I love it, really.
Yeah, of course you do. The PSR issue is going to kick in with them at some point, so it's possible that Leicester get hit with a points deduction or some sort of penalty, you know, that handicaps them from the off. So what you might find at the beginning of next season is that actually Ipswich are remarkably better placed than Leicester, certainly from a points perspective, to have a go. I think it would be incredibly difficult for Ipswich to stay up. But they have basically had this on, put this on a plate for themselves, and they've devoured it, haven't they?
Yeah.
And they deserve it.
No, not completely. Yeah. One of the things we said on the Match Ball was, it's like, congratulations, you cannot fault what they've done, given the relative resources we've got compared to them.
Yeah, you can't dig into them on the basis of PSR, as far as I'm aware. You can't dig into them on the basis of, you know, the players they've got. I mean, Farkin, I thought this was quite an ambitious line to spin, but he was talking about them having Sam Morsy, you know, experienced 32-year-old, this, that and the other. Morsy spent most of his career in the lower two leagues, or a lot of his career in the lower two leagues. I don't think that's a particularly big own, saying they've got him, we don't. It's just that McKenna has managed to make him into such a massively integral part of their team.
And I think Farker does need to be a little bit careful there, because he has, on the one hand, been keen to stress that he is the manager and therefore has more involvement and a say over recruitment. And this squad has been cast in his image. And I know that it wasn't an ideal start, and the loan scenario was difficult. And they brought in, you know, Pirro, Kamara came in relatively late, didn't they? When once they know what was going on. You know, it still has been cast in his image.
It's
up
a really
to a
good
point.
Squad. It's yeah. a really good squad. He did say, and this was some, he said this Thursday after we'd recorded the podcast, his argument was that he didn't want to sign players who were necessarily sure things or absolute bankers for this season to get you promoted if they were of no value beyond that going up. He sort of said that I wanted to try and bring players here who would be assets for us in the Premier League, who would be useful for us, who we could kind of build on, and I guess in theory, we could use to give us a better chance of not regressing in the way that we did last time and getting relegated again. And there definitely is an argument to say that that's a good thing and a good idea. But of course, the thing that has to fall into place with that is that at some point you get promoted regardless.
And I guess the key difference, though, is, you know, between us and Ipswich is Ipswich have a squad full of players who know what it feels like to get into a promotion battle because they were there 12 months ago and they've just done successive ones, you know, to their immense credit. So there's no fear going into a run-in like that, is there? Whereas how many of our players have been in that situation before?
I feel a little bit as well, like looking through Ipswich's results, a lot of the games where they've shed points or haven't played particularly well have been really difficult fixtures. You know, it feels as if the points have been spilt for them in games where that there was quite a high likelihood of that happening, as opposed to, you know, them, and I'm not saying this hasn't happened at all, but, you know, Blackburn turning up and winning in the way that they did, and then Leeds getting completely rinsed down at QPR. Just particularly bad results. And I think as well, we've sort of gone from looking at Leeds as a side who seemed almost bulletproof at home to not quite looking that way again. I mean, the first leg of this playoff, I think, is going to decide so much. I think the tone will be 100% set by what goes on at Carrow Road. And I think at the moment, Farke's first thought is going to have to be to make sure that they're not as open and as vulnerable as they were at Loftus Road or today, because that will go badly if they are.
Yeah, a two-legged affair as it is does lend itself to a more conservative approach, doesn't it, in that first leg, and see if you can frustrate that home crowd, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that'll be the way to do it. I mean, he's bang at the centre of the narrative, but it almost had to be Norwich, didn't it? And I asked him about that, and he said, well, you know, when I went back there for the first league game, it was quite emotional. By the time the second one came round, when Norwich were at Elland Road, second half of the season, he said it felt more like business. I think that's how he'll try to look at it when he goes back there. But it's difficult to get away from that. You know, the fact that it is him back there, there's so much riding on it for Leeds. A lot riding on it for Norwich as well. But I remember tweeting, I think it was after Norwich beat Ipswich in the derby over there, saying they're going to be a threat if they make the playoffs, because they've actually started to play really well this side of Christmas and this side of New Year. And they look like a threat.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Interesting question. Would you rather have had Norwich or West Brom? Because it could have gone either way today.
I don't know the honest answer to that.
I don't.
I think the West Brom away game, if we had to go on the evidence of earlier in the season, would be difficult because they're likely to set up to frustrate, which is what makes us struggle, I think. I think we were better than them. Was it the opening game of the season, West Brom? Was it Cardiff? I can't remember.
Cardiff was the
It was not long afterwards, wasn't it?
And the home game is a really difficult one to judge. Leeds actually played better in it, but it was the Nonto night, wasn't it? yes. Mayling scored that header where their focus was just miles away from really what was going on the pitch.
But we were considerably better than them that night, but it was like this, it was the second home game on the bounce where we'd found ourselves behind, even though we looked a lot better.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can read too much into that in terms of the home. So I suppose like the home leg is where you would expect us to be able to turn West Brom over. I mean, to be fair, it's academic, isn't it? We've got Norwich, so
it is. It is. I think if I'm being totally honest, if you put a gun to my head and I had the choice, I think I would probably have picked West Brom over Norwich. But there are arguments both ways, and I don't think either game's easy at all. I don't think you go into this thinking Leeds will definitely win this. But I still do maintain that if Leeds play to the peak, then they should. And if they play to the peak, then they will.
And we've been, you know, considerable number of points better than them this season.
Oh, massively, so.
So on that basis alone, you should put us down as favourite. We've outscored them by nearly 20 points this season. But, you know, it's down to this mini tournament, isn't it? And I suppose, I mean, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but out of the two, Southampton and West Brom, on today's showing, I'd prefer West Brom in the final if you were to get there.
I think so as well. I think so. Martin was trying to do that thing of saying you can't apply anything in this game to what will happen in the playoffs. And that's probably true, actually, in the grand scheme, because it's different days. It becomes a bit psychological, I think. I think that's probably the one thing that a game like that can do, is can make a manager think, you know, can get into your head a little bit. So if Farke's sort of fixating on why were they picking up so much space in the midfield, is that going to happen again? What do we do to negate it? It can change your tactics, but it is a bit of a clean slate. What I'm interested in is what was kind of being said around you in the stands today. Like, what is the mood? Because it feels pretty flat, and I think there's a bit of doubt out there.
Yeah, I think, I described it the other week when we lost to Blackburn as like the air going out of Elland Road. You could just hear it. It just went off into the stratosphere.
I thought that was really, really evident when Smodic scored. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, no expectation of a fight back from that point.
Yeah, and I think there was almost a bit of an extension of that today. If I had to describe it in a word, I'd probably say resignation. I think nobody went into that in that stadium. Nobody went into it expecting it to turn our way. There were people hoping and people checking the results, and I saw a couple of people incredibly managing to watch Sky Go with the Ipswich Huddersfield game on. I don't think anybody realistically expected us to do it. There was a little bit of what if, imagine. Yeah. But really, we knew, I think, that the die was pretty much cast at this point.
Yeah, but so, it was Huddersfield's team that made you think, you know. Yeah, I mean, I expected Huddersfield to get something from them anyway, but you just thought there's no chance.
So I think, that probably coloured everything today to a certain extent. But yeah, I don't... Leeds fans go into playoffs not expecting to win them because we've lost in every one so far. You know, I've been there for every single bloody one of them.
Yeah.
And they've all been pretty grim. But I was saying on the show leading into all this, like, I hope the squad and I hope the fans as a whole can dig deep, and I hope there's enough in that return leg after the first leg for us to think we've got a shot at this, just to restore that belief. And because and you saw it today, actually, at full time, what you were describing earlier on, Phil, when the ground had emptied and people were staying, and I took that roar as in come on, as in not so much a rocket up the arse as you described it. I hadn't really thought about it like that, but maybe it was. But I took it as an encouragement, as in we still got this. We're still with you.
But I think the reason, whether or not rocket up the arse is a good way of describing it, I think the reason it was like that was because people were looking at the players and wanting to say to them, what you say, we've still got this, this could still happen. It was almost as if saying to the players, you need to remember this, because your body language at the moment, you know, in the game, but then at full time as well, doesn't necessarily make it look like all of you are there saying, well, you know, it's fine, we're okay here. We've been beaten by Ipswich for a really good season, but, you know, we'll manage the playoffs, it'll be okay. I think there is that concern about, has it gone flat? Has it gone a little bit stale and cold? And can they be motivated in the way that they need to be? That's how it felt to me, like people saying to them,
I was saying on the shows like this week in the lead into this game, that I feel like the spacing of the playoffs now, because we've got a week now to forget, I suppose, and we'll go through that cycle of disappointment now. Mm-hmm. You pulled a face then, for the benefit of anybody on the audio version. We'll go through that cycle of, all right, the disappointment's there. We'll go through a period of acceptance, and then it'll come round to heading into next weekend, and the expectation, the hope will start to kick in again. And again, if you come out of that first leg unscathed enough or with something to go after properly in the second leg, it'll reset. And Elland Road always turns up for the players under circumstances like this. And this is when I was sort of saying, I jokingly tweeted out about us qualifying for the playoffs. I think it was when Ipswich won at Coventry through the week. So it's the playoffs then, barring a miracle. the team we have to worry most about of the four is Leeds United.
And probably, yeah.
So the crowd will turn up. I think we can, you know, all bets are off where that's concerned. The atmosphere, a week on Thursday, it'll start off hugely supportive as long as there's something to go after. And they will drive those players on. And you'll hear that roar, that come on Leeds.
Yeah, absolutely.
That Ellen Rose got out. Whether the players have got it within them to reset and harness that rather than be scared by it, that's the challenge, isn't it?
But they've got to play better than this. And I think that's where we're at the moment. Like, people around here hate the playoffs, genuinely hate the playoffs. And I totally get that. I'm not, you know, I'm a fan of the concept of the playoffs, but Leeds in the playoffs has never been any fun at all. It's never ended in a fun way. Certainly not when I've covered it.
That house and goal so was all right. At Carlisle, that was a nice moment.
It was great, but then
I thought I was going to fucking die.
It was fantastic. You know, in the
but
same,
we know what happened afterwards.
Yeah, in the same way as that Becchio goal was fantastic, but they're like isolated moments in the bigger picture that was not great and didn't end well. But I don't actually think that's what this is about at the moment. What it's about is a team who have definitely waned over the past 3 or 4 weeks. Have gone from looking so self-assured and so reliable, like clockwork, really, of just win after win after win. You know, I still, when I look back, still really impressed with the way they kind of motored through those games, Bristol City, Swansea, Plymouth. You know, it's just like getting it done, getting it done, getting it done.
That's when they felt like they'd hit their groove.
And like they were, you know, they were heading for it. And I think people reasonably felt that they were. And I felt no different, and I understand why. But as I say, you're now seeing Leeds getting hurt defensively in a way that they weren't previously. You're seeing, I think, form looking a bit more bottled up individually than actually flying. Nobody particularly playing that well at the moment. So there are kind of technical and tactical things that are going to have to improve, irrespective of what the crowd do. The crowd will definitely be there. But if you have a performance like Loftus Road, for example, if you have a performance a bit like that one today, the crowd ain't going to make any difference because there's only so much the crowd can do. And in the end, to get through the playoffs, you've got to play well.
And this is where you hope that the young squad can just rediscover that sort of fearlessness. Yeah. And as I say, the willingness to treat it as an opportunity rather than something to be dreaded. And I think that is where the crowd is at. It's underpinned by that existential terror of, we've seen this movie before, we know how this one ends. But it doesn't have to. It doesn't forever have to be like that. And that is what I was getting at, actually, in the shows last week, talking about needing to sort of shed the Leeds United skin in order to move forward. We need to stop we need to stop thinking like Leeds United in order to make Leeds United better.
Leeds are never going to shed the Leeds United skin. But
we have to. At some point, we have to. If we're ever going to move forward, if we're going to cement ourselves, for example, in the Premier League, if we get there, you know, and let's get there first. But
you may be right, actually.
Because we've been sort of broadly sensible, like in the transfer market this time. You go, oh, this, that all makes sense, and it's less. These moonshot things, and it's still not been enough. So people go, well, that's just what Leeds do. But we need to just keep treading this path of not being scared of our own shadow, I think. I don't know.
And to be fair to the 49ers as well, I don't think they're the type, certainly to go by the evidence of what they've done here so far, but also the way they run the 49ers over in the NFL, they're not the sort to act on a whim or to just abandon ideas or plans, you know, overnight. It's not their style. They very much stick to a programme. You might be right that if you get into the Premier League and you establish yourselves, the scope for crisis and banana skins and everything does decrease quite drastically. And what you're left with, I think, is more the frustration comes from what can you actually aspire to? You know, what can you actually achieve? What can you attain? What can you do? But at the same time, the sort of black ice is gone to an extent because you aren't in the playoffs where your record is that you every time you go into them, you lose. You aren't in a race for the top two that's so tight that losing the odd game here or there makes all the difference. It is the case, but there is definitely this atmosphere around Leeds, isn't there, of fearing the worst?
Yeah.
I think.
That's what I said on the show last week. Feel the fear and do it anyway. We need to somehow get into that mindset if we at all can. And just overcome that voice in your head that says, it's Leeds, we'll never do this. We choke.
And I'll say this, if they go up through the playoffs, for the players individually and for Farker and as a collective group, it'll be a tremendous body of work to have got promoted this season because I don't go along with the idea that they should have done. I think I go along with the idea that they should have put themselves in contention for it, which they have. But a lot of this does come down to really fine margins and rolls of the dice. But I know for a fact that managers who see themselves as top managers like to be seen to do it when the chips are 100% down. That's when they want to be seen as the people who really make it happen. Maresca, for example, at Leicester, your old friend, would not have in any way wanted to have been a coach who got 93 points and finished in the playoffs and got beat in the playoffs. Maresca wanted to get promoted and win the title so that he can say and have on his CV, I won the championship title in my first season with Leicester. Aren't I great?
Mm. What do you think of the reaction to this and the... I suppose it's catastrophizing and seeing the worst in it all, isn't it? And that tendency to revert to the negative, because you know, looking through comments, people suggesting that we're weak at the back, the team doesn't work hard enough, they've run out of ideas, there's no plan B, Farker is a hirsute fraud, whatever it might
kill
be.
Kill everybody.
Yeah, like tear it all down. Is it that binary? What do you think of the reaction?
I think there's criticism to be levelled, which we kind of have, about the past month and some of what's gone on. I know over the course of the season there has been a lot of discussion about are Leeds aggressive enough, are they ambitious enough in the way that they play, but I do find it difficult to argue with the way in which the process has delivered results, which is the name of the game ultimately. I also think you have to be realistic in accepting that there's a ceiling for the type of coach that you can get in the championship, and I think Leeds have got pretty much as good as you can expect to get. I'm not saying there aren't better coaches than Farker. I think you potentially see him one at Ipswich in McKenna. You know, very difficult to pick holes in anything that he's done. But, you know, if you remember last summer, the 49ers were really big on Graham Potter, but couldn't really get Potter into a position where he was prepared to seriously discuss, you know, the job with them. And part of the reason for that was he'd just come out of Chelsea. He had a bad time there, but he'd done really well at Brighton. So his stock was high and he saw himself as a Premier League coach. There is absolutely no point in saying, we should have made him an offer he couldn't refuse. We should have done X, Y, and Z, because it's just not how it works. Some coaches you just can't get. And I totally understand why they've gone, why they went for Farker, why they did go for him in the end. I think as a whole, it's worked. You know, it has clicked and it has paid off. But yes, there are things about the team that are not working at the moment. And this is where you earn your money. And this is where when people come to look at the bigger picture at the end of the season, they'll either say, well, you know, when it came to, they got over the line in the playoffs, or when it came to it, they didn't. But
is that the way and the time to judge then, do you think?
I think it probably is, don't you?
Mm.
I mean, if you were to go around slaughtering everybody now and then to be told if you left it alone, they'd have won at Wembley, you'd think, well, that wasn't very, very bright, was it? And more to the point, at this point, the die's cast, isn't it?
So yeah, you're asking fans to be not reactionary.
No, I'm not asking them to do anything.
But that's what it would have to be. Yeah.
I think I would say at the moment, I can see things that have to improve and that are going to fall to Farker to improve. You know, that is what he's, in this stage of the season anyway, this period of it, that's what he's going to be judged on. But I wouldn't go so far as saying that it's blown. I don't think it is. But I'm more convinced than ever that the first leg of this semi-final is going to be critical.
Well, we'll return and preview that then in the run-up to it towards the back end of the week. Although it'll be interesting to see if the mood shifts between now and then, as I was sort of suggesting before. Do we get onto the cycle of hope a little bit?
I think it will, because it always does. In the same way as there will have been people today who at kickoff were thinking, the atmosphere was good actually when the team came out. And you did think, you messaged me and said that, and you thought, well, at least that's there. You know, it's a kind of good start. Although I can't in any way pretend that the general vibe this morning on Twitter or in the ground was, it could happen, you know. Most people were kind of saying, it won't. But yeah, you'll find by the end of next week, people will be saying to themselves, they'll be falling back into that kind of acceptable and natural position of thinking, we actually played well a lot this season. And when we play well, we're a good team. When Somerville plays well, he's one of the best players in the division. You know, when Ampadu does, likewise, there's a lot that's good about this team. There's just not that much at this precise moment that looks that good, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so when it comes to the first leg, we know that all we need to do is go away and win the first leg, and then it's just home and hosed in the second one, don't we, Phil?
That's all right, they've already blown that record, so yeah, yeah. It doesn't matter anymore. Yeah, long game.
That was the long-term rope-a-dope, wasn't it, that one?
That's it. And at least they don't go down as the first club to get beyond 90 points and not go up automatically.
Right.
Saving grace.
We will wrap it up there and we will have a chat later in the week and we will see how everything looks then, shall we? Injuries and all that. Thanks for joining us on this one. We'll see you soon.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.